Now, the Roman government was in a bit of a pickle. They had just suffered a devastating military defeat on the Mesopotamian frontier and lost an emperor on the battlefield. This didn't exactly predispose the Romans to dealing with another barbarian people on another threatened frontier. It's another interesting problem, too. The Romans had in the past admitted modest numbers of people from many different groups into the empire, but had generally then dispersed them through military units. The Romans had never faced a request by a people, as a people, to enter the empire en bloc. This was something new. And again, in view of the recent military shock in Mesopotamia, the Romans were not perhaps thinking about novelties. Well, the Visigoths, for their part, thinking themselves loyal allies of the Romans, thinking of themselves not as having any desire to invade the Roman Empire, much less to bring about its fall, decided that the Roman government's dithering was not going to do them any good with the Huns at their back door, and they crossed the Danube without permission in 376. Now, immediately they got into contact with the Roman authorities. They wanted to do two things. They wanted official recognition of their status inside the empire, and they wanted land to settle on. These guys are farmers. They want land to settle on. The Roman government panicked. They sent north the Emperor Valens, who was not a particularly competent man, with an extremely small army, to attack these Goths. Now, not surprisingly, the Goths felt at this stage that they'd been double dealt. Yes, indeed, they met the emperor on a battlefield at Adrianople, defeated his forces, and left him dead on that field. For the Romans, that was a great shock, though it need not have been. The battle is one that we should not allow to assume too great proportions in our minds. This is the only time that a barbarian army defeated a Roman army when the armies met on anything like equal terms. The Romans were always a match for these people. The Roman military establishment was always greatly more powerful than they. The advantage on that day was to the Goths. Now, the Roman government sent the emperor Theodosius to the east to deal with the situation. Theodosius really wanted to pacify the Balkans. He wanted to retain the Goths as allies, if he possibly could. And he managed to make at least a temporary deal with them, a temporary bargain with them. We can get some sense of the way the Visigoths felt that they were being dealt with. Before Theodosius came east, for example, the Roman authorities who were dealing with them, who were trying to buy time, who were trying to decide what to do about this Visigothic settlement in the northern Balkans, were doing charming things like, for example, trading the Visigoths dog meat for their children, who were then sold into slavery. So I leave it to you to decide who are the real barbarians in all of this. The Visigoths, of course, were looking for food because they, as again, were farmers. Once they're assigned land, it's going to take them a year to get crops out of the soil. So they were looking for food from the Roman establishment and got dog meat in exchange for their children. After Theodosius' death in 395, his sons took over, one in the east, one in the west. Again, our tetrarchal and dynastic situations working very much in tandem here. They were bitter rivals. Now, I signaled this in the last lecture, that sometimes Constantinople and Rome cooperated, sometimes they competed. The Goths, meanwhile, were continuing to press the Roman government for a generous landed settlement, and now they actually begin asking the Romans for a military command in the west and a military position for their king. They wanted their king, their Gothic king, their leader, sort of absorbed into the Roman military hierarchy. So, what we can say, interestingly enough, is that this sort of gaggle of peoples, this confederation that crossed the Rhine in something of a panic in the year 376, had over 20 or 30 years' time in the northern Balkans sort of forged themselves into a people under a king. And they are now negotiating through their king with the Roman authorities. In a way, in other words, we have watched the Visigoths become the Visigoths. And you'll notice that this happened inside the Roman Empire and not outside it. And you notice that it happened in dealings with the Roman authorities. All right. Now, at the beginning of the 5th century, the Goths got tired, not surprisingly, of being pawns in Roman politics. The government of Constantinople was always trying to get them to go west. The government in the west was always trying to keep them in the east. They moved into Italy in 406. In 408, there was a bit of violence in Italy. In 410, they threatened and then actually sacked the city of Rome. Now, that seemed a cataclysmic event at the time. St. Jerome off in Bethlehem wailed it. St. Augustine in North Africa began writing his City of God. We'll talk about both of them in later lectures.